If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, something I was thinking about beforehand, like, okay, if we're going to do this, like, what's the goal? What's the outcome? What are we going to chase? And I felt $500 million was a fair number. I think that's pretty reasonable in 10 years. I actually think it's possible to potentially do more.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Chris is the founder of JAG Communities based in Jacksonville, Florida. He started investing in real estate in 2016 by attempting to flip houses in New York. And after months of failing, he attempted out-of-state flips, purchasing tax deeds, and finally found his footing in multifamily. Chris joint ventured on just over 100 units before joining Toro Real Estate Partners as their head of Florida operations. They purchased 4,000 units worth $300 million, with 1,000 units in Florida over a period of roughly 4 years. Chris left Toro in November of 2020 to start his own company, which owns and manages small to mid-size apartment complexes in the Jacksonville MSA. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, this is great. This is great. You've got a really cool background where you've seen a lot of things. You've seen both failure and success in a very short period of time. And so I'd really love, you know, the same questions ask everybody who comes on. If you can give us just a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
Yeah, so out of college, played Division I soccer up in New York, born and raised there, and didn't really have anything. So went and coached Division II for a year up in Massachusetts, missed home, so moved back, wanted to do coaching, but didn't want to do youth coaching. So I got a job as a stockbroker, just making cold calls for the licensed brokers. And that was kind of like my first real life introduction into like investing in business and stuff. And I really enjoyed it. So I decided I was going to leave coaching and start exploring this world. But as I started getting more into the stockbroker world, I realized that that wasn't quite the good fit, but I really enjoyed like the finances, the money, the investing and stuff. So I eventually got licensed, but right as I got licensed, my mom and my cousin bought a flipping course. They brought me along to it. And that was my first introduction into real estate. I knew nothing before that. And we spent several months trying to flip houses on Long Island, but completely failed. We were trying to do it on the MLS. Margins were super skinny. We just weren't doing it right and didn't really understand how to go about it, even though I know several people that are doing it successfully there. But it wouldn't have been right for us anyway. So we started exploring other options and we wanted to partner with a flipper out of state to learn how to do that. So lent some money to a guy doing it in PA. We did okay, him not so much, but we met his cousin, John, who is one of the co-owners at Toro. And he had gotten to start doing tax deeds down in Philly. So we thought about trying that, right? Buying stuff for pennies on the dollar, flipping it, and then, you know, possibly holding some for renting. But it was just in really rough areas that we didn't like. So we passed on that pretty quickly. And then John had been doing multifamily for about a year and a half, give or take. And he was raising money for this 8-unit property. We decided to join him in that one. Then we co-GP'd another 17 units there, then an 82-unit property. And then eventually I moved over and joined Toro because I wanted to get a like hands-on understanding of how the business worked. And Toro was focused on much larger properties. So 100 to 500-unit properties, $5 to $50 million deals. The ones that we had been doing were $500,000 to $3 million. And I also needed a job too. I was still working as a stockbroker and I hated it. So I wanted to transition out and I figured why not just combine the two instead of trying to make it work on my own. You know, let's get some experience. Let's make some money and figure it out from there. And it ended up being the best decision. Went over there. They kind of coached me up and then eventually evolved into a role where I was running all the properties down in Florida. We bought 1,000 units there as about $60, $70 million worth of properties, successfully exited two. So by the time I left late last year, we had about 750 units, give or take. And then I decided to leave. I was buying a 16-unit property down here in Jacksonville. I was still in New York at the time and had always thought about going off on my own and thought this was just a really good opportunity. I really felt there was a gap in my knowledge on the property management operations and like physical aspect of the property side. So for me, it was, let's come down, let's start a vertically integrated syndication business from day one, right? Ownership and property management. But worst case scenario, I'm going to learn a ton about how properties get operated, how they get managed, you know, what the typical property aspects are, like the plumbing, the ACs, the roofs, you know, really understanding that stuff on an intimate level. And, you know, worst case, I can take that knowledge and apply it to something else if it doesn't work out. So just packed in my car, moved down here the weekend after Thanksgiving. I've been here about 2.5 months. Right now, we just own the one property that's 16 units, but my 10-year plan is to get to 500 million under management.
Right. And the cool thing, I think, about that you said there is, you know, you have a 10-year plan, which is really cool. But secondly, you've already seen it. You've seen this occur in a short period of time. And so you've kind of been through it once. So, you know, repetition is probably easier than just starting it on your own.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I was coming up from one unit to 16 and trying to get to 500 million, it would probably be a tougher mindset for me to get behind. But I kind of sat there and I basically like kind of went roughly year by year and figuring out like, hey, here's what I'm going to have to buy. Here's how I'm going to have to scale. Here's the people I'm going to have to hire. Here's roughly the revenue I'm going to have to hit. And it's super high level and rough, right? Because I'm never going to hit those numbers. It's going to be totally different. And I may change my mind in 3 years and, you know, alter course. But I at least sat down and did the exercise being like, okay, if here's the goal, like, how do we actually get there? At least like a rough understanding of like, what do we have to do and how do we have to get there? So, you know, it's something I was thinking about beforehand, like, okay, if we're going to do this, like, what's the goal? What's the outcome? What are we going to chase? And I felt 500 million was a fair number. I think that's pretty reasonable in 10 years. I actually think it's possible to potentially do more, but, you know, I thought it was a good number to shoot for.
Right. Sure. And that's what so many people miss, I think, is just even the practice of doing that, I think, presents incredible value. You know, because now you're aiming for something, and heck, you can always change course later on. You can yeah. Pivot and say, all right, we're going to, you know, change a few degrees left or right and change the new target. But man, people that have never sat down and figured out what the destination is and worked their way backwards, it's just a lot harder to know where to go today when you don't know where you want to wind up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm already, you know, I'm 3 months into it. I've already changed a couple things that I thought I would be doing, you know, in day to day. Like I thought, you know, to manage a 16 unit doesn't take 40, 50 hours a week, right? So I thought I would be doing more wholesaling or other things in the meantime. And I found I just don't really enjoy that or see it as an option. I'm still going to look to potentially do like some wholesaling, but I might change it up. Instead of like the traditional single family way of type doing it, I'm thinking of maybe trying to be more of like a small multifamily thing / like connector or networker and just trying to like plug myself into things in different ways, instead of trying to do the traditional route of sending, you know, 4,000 mailers a month or whatever crazy stuff people do. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think I have a skill set that doesn't lend itself to that. And it's just not something I also enjoy too. I don't really love driving around all day. I don't love pounding the phone. Don't love talking to those sellers, especially when they live in the house and they have an emotional attachment to it. So it's just realize quickly. So I'm going to, you know, pivot and do something else.
Right. Right. No, that's super cool. That's super cool. So talk to us, you know, really about what, I guess, high level, how you are like, what are some things that you boiled down from your big goal to now today? Like, what are things that you have to do today? You say, all right, these are ways that I am building the building blocks for getting to your ultimate goal. What are some of those?
So the way I broke it down, as I said, if it's 500 million worth of assets, you're roughly a third of that is going to be equity. So let's say for easy math, it's 150, right? It's a little bit more than that, but let's say it's 150 or even if it's 200, right? Most of the time, investors want to see you co-invest. The rough rule of thumb is like 10%, give or take, but you might get away with 5% as you get bigger in different partners, things like that. So that means if it was 150 million equity, I would have to have 15 million in GP money to go buy deals.
Right.
I don't have to have 15 million myself, but I may need partners or family or whatever that makes up part of that GP. So for me, it was, okay, if I've got to get to that 15 million mark, what can I do today to get myself up to there? Now, luckily, I was able to save a ton of money. My family has some money that I can leverage. But for me in the short term, the way I thought about getting there was I said, okay, how do I maximize the dollars I have today? And without getting into a super transactional business, like I don't want to be somebody that's always flipping multifamily deals every 18 months, 36 months, like a lot of people do. And I understand why people do it, right? Because some people want to really like, you know, hit like 1.8, 2x multiples really quick and try to stack capital and things like that. But I firmly believe that time in the market is better than trying to time the market. So for me, I want to buy deals that I'm owning for 5, 10, 15 years, especially the deal we just bought, I think is going to crush it for the next 10 years. I love the location. I love the asset. I love the floor plan. I love everything about it without falling in love with it. I love it from, you know, the investment side and the location side. So for me, I said, okay, let's try to do a quasi burr strategy for these multifamily deals where let's get in, let's renovate as quickly as we can, refi out as much capital as we can, and then go repurpose that money a couple times over, build a nice little portfolio, and or once we refinance, then I can start leveraging that as the 10% general partnership, go out and raise LP money and, you know, start building a portfolio that way. So like, you know, in an ideal world, I'd love the next deal to just be myself and family. But I understand that if a slightly bigger deal than we're capable of doing comes along, that, you know, that may happen sooner rather than later. So I'm being flexible, but I have a couple different ideas of how to get there.
Right. No, I think that's great when you figured out, okay, the 10% number. I think that's something that we often miss, because how you develop that nest egg to become part of the GP that, you know, their investors want to see, I think is an important, important part that people often miss. What is your primary, I guess it is multifamily, your primary focus then is multifamily assets?
So, you know, for me right now, I'm hyper-focused on Jacksonville and existing multifamily. Before I came down, I also took a look at what the size, like what was my supply like? Like what was I, you know, was I walking into 20 properties that are available to buy, or am I walking into 20,000 properties? So I actually pulled lists from the county and looked at the available supply and thought there was enough. So there's about 300 or so properties, between 300, 400 properties that are between 10 and 80 units in Jacksonville and Clay County. And then there's about like 4,000, 4,500 that are between 2 and 9 units. So I figured, okay, there's probably enough supply to keep me busy for a little while. And then over, you know, 100 plus, you know, 80 plus units, there's like 300, 400 as well in Jacksonville too. So there's a decent amount of supply. You know, obviously you probably take out 30 to 50% of those based on location, age, you know, floor plans, things like that, that I just probably wouldn't consider, but still enough supply for me to be like, okay, let's make this work. However, I am also starting to explore the option of development and self-storage. One thing I'm hyper aware of that's always been important to me is diversification. You know, like I have money in the market, I have money in real estate, and, you know, some in cash as well. Would love to eventually expand beyond that. But all the real estate was always in different locations too. You know, Toro did in the Midwest and the Southeast. So I wasn't stuck to one location. Now, if everything's going to be in Jacksonville, now my location diversity is not there. So I'm looking more at asset diversification as well. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to be, you know, the largest self-storage owner in Jacksonville, or I'm going to develop 3,000 units. But I think it's interesting, and I at least am starting to explore the path to be like, hey, is this a viable option and something I want to, you know, bring into the company or the portfolio? Or is it, you know, just something worth learning because I'm just curious in general?
Right, right. No, I think that's a really smart point, and something that, you know, we as investors often miss, as much as we always talk about, you know, I think stock market diversification, people always, you know, an equal weighting of stocks, or, you know, a mix of stocks, bonds, some risky, some not, you know, trying to allocate it that way. But having a portfolio diversification, either geographically or asset class or both, is, I think, a really good idea that maybe solo focused investors may miss is that need to really become, you know, multidimensional in what you invest in. So I like the idea that you went to the county, you pulled all these records, you said, okay, there's X number between 2 and 9, you know, 100 and 500, whatever it is, the unit size. I would think that there's a certain unit size that you can stay under that would keep all of the institutional players out. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the reasons that I really, you know, decided to move here and build this and do that was, I said, for the first couple of years, I felt I would have a competitive advantage in the sub $10 million space and the, call it the sub 80 unit space. Because 80 units, you got, you know, if you buy it cheap enough, you can possibly support on-site staff, things like that. And that's really what any out-of-state investment group or institutional investor is going to, institutions aren't looking at 80 units, but syndication groups, one-off guys from out of state, if they're going to third-party manage, they're probably going to be looking for really 100 or 150 plus, but you do have groups that will go down to 70, 80, 90 units. I mean, Toro was one of them. So I'm hyper aware that you have some people looking there, but not as many. But the lower you go, you're just competing against different people. Now, you do have the individuals, the lawyers, the doctors, the high net worth people that are local or in Florida or whatever that will buy a 20, 30, 50 unit. But they're also not going to be looking the same way I am. They're not going to be as flexible or looking for the same thing. So, you know, and there are local people, you know, I've met a ton of groups and people that are looking for those deals, but just the amount of people that are looking, I feel is far, far, far less. So that, okay, yeah, you're still competing against someone, you're going to have some competition, but I think my likelihood of a deal making sense or having less eyeballs on it is greater, which gives me a better chance of finding a better returning deal in the near term. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out though.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's for sure. If you're not, that's something that we're seeing right now here in the beginning of, it's being recorded the second month of 2021, you know, we're seeing all this institutional money pouring into really all asset classes as it pertains to real estate, but especially multifamily and things like that. And as that money pours in, these margins just keep getting compressed and compressed. So if you can, you know, go where they aren't, that's always a good move. Let's talk about funding. When it comes to funding these deals, I know you talked about this earlier, but I just maybe want to turn this back around on that. You said that, you know, you guys you have your own money, you have some family money. Have you guys syndicated your deals yet? Or is that something that's in the future for you? Or are you guys looking for investors? What's that look like?
Yeah, so definitely will be at some point. So what kind of happened was Toro did a bunch of business Q4 and Q1 of 2019, 2020. So I had a good chunk of money come in. You know, we bought a couple of deals, sold a couple of deals. So I had money come in. And then as COVID started happening, I thought it was going to be a really great buying opportunity. I thought there's going to be a lot more distressed opportunities in the multifamily space. And I really thought in the smaller mom and pop space as well, because, you know, they may not have as big cash reserves. They may not have the knowledge or the efficiency to really understand what's going on with local laws and regulations and eviction moratoriums, things of that nature. Or I also thought there might be the guy who owns a restaurant also owns a multifamily building and the restaurant's getting smoked. So he sells the performing asset for 70 cents on the dollar, something like that. Obviously that didn't happen, but I had that conversation with family members and said, hey, let's commit some money. Let's find something we can, you know, find for 50 to 70 cents on the dollar, you know, all cash offer, close quickly, really buy something for a discount, renovate it, fix it up. And then once we're kind of through COVID, we could refinance, pull out our money and then some and have this really great asset that owes us nothing. Obviously that didn't quite happen, but I continued to look for deals because I also wanted to have a deal that, you know, wasn't obviously the stock market, but also wasn't a Toro deal. So I wasn't relying upon other investors or business plans or, you know, it's just your own deal with your own people. You don't have to worry about anybody else. And this 16 unit deal just came along in like August of last year. Toro had just bought a deal around the corner that I pushed really, really hard for because I really like the submarket. And we closed on that in April of 2020. And it had almost identical floor plans and was doing very, very well. So I was super excited about it day one. It had been mismanaged and was like classic units. So it was just primed for a value add and really was what I was looking for. Honestly, don't know if I could have gotten a better first deal. So we just took that down ourselves. We still have money that we're looking to place. I would love to have another deal or two that's just family with no investors, just as like, hey, you know, we can kind of decide to do whatever we want. If we want to sell, we sell. If we want to refi, we refi. If we want to renovate, we renovate. Like, you don't really have to answer to anyone. But at some point, obviously, to get to 500 million in assets, I'm never, you know, it would be really tough for me to get, you know, $150, $175 million personally to go do that myself. So yes, very soon within, I would say the next 6 to 18 months, we'll be, you know, syndicating out and raising money from investors.
Right. No, that's a great point. I love the, you know, the speed, I'm going to call it the speed of money. It's probably the wrong term, but the flexibility when the deal is yours is something that we often give up when we start syndicating deals. Cause you know, when it's you, there's no PBMs, there's no offering memorandums. There's, hey, this is a prudent business decision. So this is what we're doing. So, you know, and that's a great place to be, you know, it has both its pluses and minuses, but that's a great place to be. And I think you make some great points about that.
You know, one thing that we did that was really great, and one of the reasons I did it, was we've purposely left two units vacant for 2 months to talk to a ton of people and allow me to really understand more about the process, the building, the aspects, you know, all these tiny little things. Like, I've done a ton of research on, you know, sound transmission and subfloors and putting in new flooring and really understanding how the plumbing works and the electrical, you know, the roofs, the attics, you know, the siding, and spent a lot of time because I knew it was always a weakness of mine. And I said, hey, let's just take our time. Let's really talk to people. Let me understand, because this deal has, I think, some pretty nice margins on it where, you know, we're still cash flow positive with two units offline, not offline, but not occupied. And I just said, you know, let's take a little bit of extra time. Let's really understand what's going on so that when the next deal comes along, whether it's with investors or not, or if the margins are a little bit skinnier, I don't have to figure it out at that time. I can spend this time now when we have it and we're not under pressure, that the next deal that comes along, I don't have to spend 2 months after closing. I'll know it as we go through closing, and the day we close, it's like, boom, let's go.
Right. So clarify again for our listeners, why did you leave those two units vacant again? I don't understand that completely.
So we're going to be renovating the units.
Okay.
So my plan is to renovate all the units inside the first year to allow us to refi all our money out between 12 and 15 months from the closing date. We want to refi into long-term agency debt, get some interest only, cash flow, pull out a ton of money to go repurpose it. For me though, it was, I've always said, like, I didn't really understand the different materials in the subfloors, like plywood, gypcrete, you know, concrete type subfloor, all the different things that go into it. I've never really understood how all the plumbing fits together and works. You know, I know that galvanized plumbing was a problem, but I didn't know why. I didn't know what part of the plumbing it was. I didn't really understand it because I didn't need to at the time, right? For Tor, it was galvanized plumbing. All right, that, you know, we got to account for that. But now it's like, okay, how does it actually all work and fit together? So for me, it was getting different contractors and vendors in and going over the different options too for renovations and why certain materials over others, you know, when to keep cabinets, when to not, appliances, you know, all these different things that, you know, probably a lot of people already know, but I didn't, because I was just on the financial side of things. And we leaned on our property managers to be like, okay, here's what we want. Here's what we want to spend. Here's the result we want to achieve. Are we in line with our budget? Do we need to increase it? Do we need to decrease it? And they had the expertise and the experience to be like, and it's going to be $1,000 more because of your plumbing. But I didn't know exactly why. So for me, it was, let me come down and really understand why certain things are the way they are and take that extra time to, you know, talk to the experts that knew, educate myself. And then now we're in a space where, you know, I feel I've learned a decent amount and I'll always be learning, but I've learned enough that, like, as the next deal comes along, you know, I know all the things to look for right away and I can kind of put that together significantly quicker. And this was a deal that I think we got at a pretty decent discount that, you know, we'll be fine. It's, again, it's family money too. We kind of just made a conscious decision, and I think it's only going to benefit us for the rest of the units as well as, you know, future deals as well.
Right. No, that's really smart. That's really smart. Yeah. If you don't have that background in it, you've got to get the education somewhere. Otherwise it will.
Sure.
And property ownership will cost you at some point. Either it's going to cost you to get the education now, or it'll cost you later when you end up spending money on repairs maybe you don't need, or hiring the wrong contractor. So
exactly,
that's super great. Let's jump into the final four here if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
A lot of things that you think are going to happen super quick are going to take a lot longer. And a lot of the things that you think are going to take super long are going to happen way quicker. So, you know, I look at where I was 5 years ago until today, you know, a lot of the things that I thought would happen inside a year or two took much longer, but I also know I'm way further along than I thought I would be 5 years ago. I know that's not like super specific, but, you know, just understand that something, especially in the multifamily world, things move a little bit slower, especially like seeing results, seeing rental increases, seeing NOI increases. Those things take a little bit longer than, you know, when you're trying to flip a house or wholesale.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. There's no fast paycheck right away, typically in that world. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
So I actually, I started the 75 Hard program about on day 23. And for anyone that doesn't know what that is, but just high level, it's 75 days straight. If you miss anything at any point, you go back to day one. It's two workouts a day. One has to be outside, 45 minutes each. You drink a gallon of water a day. You stick to a meal plan with no cheat meals. no alcohol, and you have to read 10 pages of a nonfiction book every day.
Wow. Good for you. Good for you. What? How many times have you started over?
Zero. This is the first time I'm trying it.
Good for you. And you're on day what?
Yesterday was day 22, so we're on day 23.
Good for you, man. That's fantastic. That's well done. Mm-hmm. Well done. I like that. That's ambitious. Number three is, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
So I donate to charities here and there as people I know do them. But the real reason I do a lot of podcasts, social media, things like that, like, I don't have a course. I don't have anything at the end of this. If you ask me, then I'm gonna be like, hey, go buy my book, go buy this. This is my way to give back, because I had a lot of people that reached out to me, or I reached out to, excuse me, along my journey. And I still do, right? I mentioned development and self-storage. I'm asking everybody I know about it to try to understand it. And I think that's what I really like about this industry and this community of real estate and real estate investors, is there's an abundance mindset. People are really willing to help you. So, you know, that's my way to kind of contribute back to the community and help out other people that, you know, aren't as far along as I am, or are looking to shift into something I am, or maybe I can just help in one way or another. So that's really, you know, the bulk of it.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Chris, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
Yeah. Easiest way is, you know, social media. So anything you look up, just Chris Grenzig, but, you know, shoot me a DM on Instagram, connect with me on LinkedIn. You know, Instagram is at Chris.Grenzig. Everything else is just Chris Grenzig. I answer pretty much everything, and happy to, you know, jump on the phone or really talk to anybody.
That's Grenzig, spelled G-R-E-N-Z-I-G. Chris, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
You got it, bud.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.